Our next guest did something that you almost certainly have never done. Last year, journalist Chris Moody was laid off from his job at CNN in New York, so he and his wife moved out of their apartment, sold most of their belongings, and turned a van into a tiny house with solar panels on top to take a journey across North America.
We decided that instead of staying in New York City, we would build our own off-grid tiny house inside of a cargo van and travel around the country to try to find stories about people beyond the anxious cities of the Northeast, especially after looking at data that showed that while the stock market is skyrocketing and the economy is doing very well in the United States right now, that depression, anxiety, and loneliness rates are also incredibly high. And we wanted to find out if there's anyone out there that's living better. Then we needed to find out how to do that. And that is where the idea of the van came in.
Well, and tell me what the van looked like inside and out.
On the outside, it looks just like a carpenter or a plumber's van. It's a Ram ProMaster high top, one of those that you see driving down the street, often making deliveries. The post office uses these vans. Mm-hmm. And on inside is a kitchen, a bathroom, a bed that becomes a couch, and all powered through solar and a water containment system. And we had no previous experience in building. I'd never held a power tool in my hand. And because of YouTube and Instagram and a lot of communities that are sharing ideas about how to build things like this, we pieced it together in 1 month. Now, we did have some help. Christy's father is an electrical engineer, and he helped us figure out the solar, which I will say is the trickiest part. But after a month, we were ready in our self-built little house, and we hit the road.
And where did you go?
We traveled about 35,000 miles across 40 states. What really dictated where we went was largely the weather. We had no heat or air conditioning in the back. And so when it got hot, we had to go up. And when it got warm, we had to go down. So we traveled all across the U.S. and Canada. Also, we were visiting communities around the country that were trying to live intentionally, people that are also living in tiny houses, minimalists, people that build their own homes and living a lot more free lives.
You found a lot of those people?
We did, all across the country, because you see right now is a fascinating time because the way technology has improved, it has connected people across the country that can share ideas about how to live a little bit differently in the United States. I don't know about you, but I grew up thinking there was only a handful of ways that you were supposed to live. You're supposed to get a job and get a mortgage and fill it with stuff, and that was a fulfillment of the American dream. We found that there are so many more definitions of what the American dream means. It's not just measured by material success. It can be measured by time or time with family or doing what you love. And people all across this country, I would say, have cracked the code or experimenting with redefining what it means to live that American dream and not the one that was maybe set by previous generations.
Because they don't have access to that old-fashioned American dream or because they want to live this new American dream?
It can be a mixture of both. We encountered many different types of communities. On one hand, you have people that are pushed out by the system, whether it's for economic reasons or housing prices are skyrocketing. And then you have other people who have a set of values that they sincerely want to live by, let's say minimalism, the tiny house people. And they pursue that by giving up all of their stuff. You know, like us, we sold or gave away almost all of our things. And we have found that by having less stuff, it gives us more time together and arguably more freedom in the future.
Did you talk politics with people?
This is so fascinating because I used to be a political reporter and I traveled around the country a lot. And I was the one that always had to bring up politics as the political reporter. And I found that on this trip, if I allowed other people to talk about what they wanted to, politics did not come up much at all. And by that, I mean Washington, D.C. based federal politics. Mm-hmm. I didn't hear the words Donald Trump or Russia for about a year from people when I let them talk about their own passions. But I did talk to people about local issues. And a lot of times for people that are trying to live a little bit differently, politics does become an issue and doesn't allow you to build in the way you will. And I'll give you an example. In Austin, Texas, there was a man who wanted to do tiny houses for the homeless in the city. And he had a lot of trouble getting through zoning and through locals who didn't want that in their community. And he found that he had to go just outside city limits and build what he wanted there, where the zoning rules were a lot different. And that is where politics often doesn't necessarily work very well with alternate ways of living. It can be a very sticky situation.
you traveled, as you said, all over the country to about 40 states. What was your favorite place? What was the place you would have stayed if you could?
You know, we fell in love with northern New Mexico, Santa Fe and north. It looks a lot like parts of Colorado, but there are a lot less people there. And there we encountered a group that has built the largest off-grid subdivision in the nation. Hmm. They're building homes out of largely recycled materials. And the homes essentially are self-sustaining, and they provide water, heat, electricity, all through solar and different systems that we've built. And after we encountered some time with them in northern New Mexico, we actually traveled with them to Puerto Rico to build a self-sustaining off-grid compound for victims of Hurricane Maria. And we spent time with them experimenting with how could you build a hurricane-resistant home that provides water and electricity for people vulnerable to increasing weather patterns and climate patterns? How could we get them access to fresh food and water and electricity shortly after a storm and not, in some people's cases, several months?
It sounds like you sort of discovered things that were important that you didn't realize before in your old life in New York City.
That's true. In New York and when I lived in Washington before that, when you live in these cities, you start to think that they're the only things that matter and the only places where anything interesting is happening. And I am here to tell you that that is absolutely not true. What is going on in Washington is incredibly important for the country. Don't get me wrong. But there are amazing things being done elsewhere. And it's important, I think, especially for journalists to spend time not just in rural areas, but places, you know, outside of New York or Washington, D.C., and see what we can learn from the rest of the country. Also living in cities around the country where people are experimenting with different ways to live, different ways to live together. I would say that for the most part, the people that we encountered, they're living according to their values. And that has led them to make very different conclusions about how they should live in the United States. And I would say, has made them happier than a lot of the rest of us that are running on the hamster wheel, if you will.
Are you still living in the van?
We're in the van now. I'm in Washington, D.C. right now visiting family, but we are still in the van traveling and hoping to encounter more communities along the way.
And where do you park it? Where do you sleep at night?
It's in Northern Virginia at a friend's house where we can get free parking. And in the city of Washington, D.C., it can be a bit expensive. However, I will tell you that we did park it not too far from the Supreme Court and slept on the streets of Capitol Hill. And because it looks like a cargo van, no one noticed. And I want to say, we've done this all across the country, essentially living mostly rent-free. It's a stealthy-looking car. It doesn't look like anything other than a van from the outside. And we've only had one police encounter the whole time.
And what was that about?
We were sleeping in a beach town in Oregon where they filmed The Goonies, and a police officer came and knocked on the door real loudly, and he told us to go to an RV park down the street. He was very kind about it, and then after the interaction, he looked up in the van and said, "You'd build this yourself? You did a nice job."
Let me ask you two questions, Chris Moody. First of all, what was the thing about living in the van that was most difficult?
Well, you can imagine a married couple moving into 72 square feet together and learning not only to live together, but living among systems that we're not used to. We, you know, had to figure out our water system and our electricity. We only have two solar panels up there, and that only allows you to turn on your lights, turn on your water, charge a cell phone, and have about one hot water boil a day for coffee. And after that, you're starting to run out of electricity. And so we adapted our lives to a much more simple life. I'll tell you, the first week was very difficult. We were in New England and it was cold and raining and it was a hard time and we had to learn to adjust. I want to say something about what it does to a husband and wife, especially for a husband. In my experience, look, even if a man and a woman are both working full-time, the data show that women do more domestic work at home. And often a husband like me can hide and only do the work that the wife asks you to do. I was probably a lazy husband. But when you live in 72 square feet with no other rooms to hide, you're either doing work and helping with the chores or you're lounging. And I learned very quickly that one couldn't lounge when someone else is working right in front of you. And so not just in building the van together, but in living in the van together, mm-hmm. we learned to work together in ways that we were never able to do in a more comfortable setting. And I think that's going to be better for us in the long run.
Okay. And then finally, what has been the worst part about adjusting back into life in the big city?
You know, when we were in the van, we did not have access to video streaming or television or entertainment like that. We spent our time together in the woods or reading books together or listening to audiobooks. It was just about as high-tech as we got. And we also didn't read the news. And that frees up your time and your mind. It really makes, I would argue, your relationship much better together. Now coming back to the real world where everyone has streaming and television or staying with family, I am so easily prone to falling right back into all of those old habits. And that has been the hardest thing, is trying to find out how to live with the values of the tiny house, the values of the van, in normal life. And I'm constantly combating not falling into my old ways because I want to keep what we learned in the van.
That is Chris Moody, who spent the last year traveling across the country while living in a 72-square-foot van with his wife, and they are writing a book about it. And the book will be called?
Maybe Life Opted Out, a 35,000-mile journey in search of a more meaningful American dream.
Thank you so much for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
And you can see photos of Chris Moody's van, and we'll link you to his Instagram account at hereandnow.org.